Hello and welcome to the second episode of Rising Voices, a new podcast series by Itinera. My name is Safa and I'm thrilled to be your host today. I'm a fellow at Itinera, a think tank that focuses on public policy issues related to entrepreneurship and innovation. Throughout this show, we will highlight the inspiring stories of founders who have overcome obstacles to create successful businesses. Rising Voices aims to provide a platform for underrepresented entrepreneurs to share their stories and experiences, offer advice, and inspire other minorities to pursue their dreams in entrepreneurship. I'm really excited to embark on this journey with you and share these inspiring stories with our listeners. And without further ado, I'd like to introduce our guest, Hadil Hulayl Mohammed. Societal impact has always determined Hadil's course of action. Former human rights lawyer at Progress Lawyers Network and policy advisor on sustainable mobility at the Cabinet of the Secretary of State for the Brussels Metropolitan Region, Bruno de Lille, her belief in the power of entrepreneurship as a motor for a better world brought her to Bubble Post, a scale-up in ecological urban logistics with European ambitions. In 2017, she co-founded Cyclability, a startup that leases electric bikes B2B to stimulate sustainable work-home mobility. And in 2019, she founded Kaira because she believes that a better world can be made by creating space and time for putting systemic societal impact first. She is a transition coach and consultant in systemic societal impact for companies and individuals. She's also a guest professor at Howard University in network economies and a researcher on societal impact. Hadil, thank you so much for talking to us today and welcome.
Yes, thank you so much, Safa, for the invitation. So my journey started quite at a young age because I was very sensitive for justice or injustice. And quite soon I knew I wanted to become a lawyer. And so I became a lawyer. I worked on justice in an activist law firm, which was super interesting, but at the same time quite demotivating. Also because, law is very political and, as you know, politics are these days not favorable for the people in the more difficult situations, let's say. So that was a reason why I questioned my role as a lawyer, and also the fact that I was always working with one family or one individual. Also the fact that lawyers always think problem-focused because the problem is the center of the reasoning of everything. And it's very attack-defense. And I was quite fed up with that. So I felt I wanted to zoom out and have this bigger impact in between brackets and try to zoom out and have this more impact on a larger societal scale. And that's what brought me to the cabinet, like the back office politics, which was also super interesting, and I worked on mobility there, which is, I didn't have affinity with it in the beginning, but I found it's a very, very social topic. It makes your cities more accessible or not. So, but then the person I was working for, Bruno de Lille, he was not re-elected. So I just questioned, okay, what would I like to do? And I also learned that it's very hard to be in politics not compromising on your ideals, specifically when you're working in Belgium with the coalition structures of the governments. So I decided to leave politics behind. And I followed a course on humanitarian aid because I thought that might be something that I would like to do. But then during that course, I learned that actually we can make so much impact in the local space, like Belgium for me at this moment. And so entrepreneurship was for me very clearly a way to push or support change or use it as a tool for change. And that's what brought me in this startup space. And I landed at a Bubble Post, a startup scale-up at that time that was working on the city distribution and make it more ecological. the business development there was also very business-wise or professionally-wise a very interesting experience. But at the same time, it was, how should I put it, an experience that was also confronting because it was focusing on the ecological impact, but socially and internally in the company, it was quite tough to be in a strategic position as a woman and also as a woman with a Muslim name or a different name than a Flemish name, let's say. Because to be honest, it's quite recently that I feel I'm obliged to identify with the concept of diverse founder, because I was born and raised in Belgium. I actually always felt Belgian, and I was really never feeling different. But then I came to university and I had this, my official name, which is Hulayl Mohamed, before it was just Hulayl. And I was approached completely differently by so many people. So actually when I was 18, I got this new identity that was kind of forced upon me. It took me some time to process that, because it was quite new for me to discover, to be approached in strange ways and to be underestimated concerning language. And wow, your Dutch is so good. I'm like, that's my mother tongue. What's wrong with you? So that was weird. And then, people ask questions, where are you from? I'm like, I'm from Machelandelea, where I live. And I'm like, but where are you really from? And this is, okay, this is really new for me. And I lost and unfortunately still lose so much energy in this, that I just would like to share this. And my strategy now is to keep, to stay very close with myself and just be and stay close with myself. And that enables me to be very in touch with my intuition and then just leave it. So I don't know if you mentioned it in the beginning, but then after Bubble Post, I founded, co-founded Cyclability with an ex-colleague of Bubble Post, and we just intended to make a social impact, an ecological impact, and also like a financial impact, because we could live from the business model, which was really nice. It's still a very well-functioning business model, but unfortunately we had severe problems with the co-founder, so I had to step out, which was also quite a tough lesson to learn. The fact that I'm a woman working with a man in a business context is really not evident. I just also learned during the building up of Cyclability that it was so hard to find funding for a new business model. Even if we had a strong financial case. And so I'm like, there are so many people with strong ideas on societal impact, on focusing on this social and ecological added value without necessarily having a strong financial plan that's integrated in the model or in the idea. But these people in Belgium, there is really no place to find funding. And so I'm like, we need these ideas. We need to simulate these people to continue building these new stories, these new images. To be able to build these things, you need to support the people with funding and with coaching and with network. And that's what we do with Kaira. So now Kaira is this philanthropic transition fund. And we support pioneers with these innovative ideas on social and ecological and economical system change with grants and with coaching and network. So that's what we do, and it's tough. I will be very honest, because it's philanthropy and it's not impact investing. And it's also very conscious that I chose to take that path, because every person that creates a new business, even if it has a strong financial model or not, needs some gifts and to like the wind in the back and the money that says, okay, we trust you, just we trust your idea, we trust your personality, and we believe you can do this. Go for it. And yeah, I truly believe that what you nourish grows, what you give attention grows, and so that's why we're doing what we do.
That's beautiful. And would you say that your identity or personal journey also inspired you to create Cyclability, maybe in even more so Kaira? Like, do you think it actually nurtures as well how you work at Kaira and manage it?
Absolutely. The way I attach a lot of importance to well-being of people in a large sense of the word and the planet, of course, it's reflected in the way we write our contracts. It's reflected in the way that we work based on trust. In this quite tough arena, because actually it's pioneering work. So it's new. People don't know the concept. You need to explain it a lot. You need to make your the vision that you see in front of you, you need to make it tangible, because in the beginning it's too abstract. And a very big lesson that I learned for me personally is that in the beginning I started with convincing people. And I actually am learning that it's absolutely not working like that. Convincing is not efficient. It's by telling a story, showing a project that we support. Then people are like, oh, wow, that's cool. That's interesting. Yeah. And then they're like, oh, that's cool. I want to be part of this. Instead of, this climate change and climate crisis and we need to act. And it's like totally people stressing out people. And I also believe that, a negative message is not motivating at any time. So it's about creating... actually it's about creating hope and giving that a concrete form and then inviting people to join. It's a question of a very personal clicks with people. It's sharing your ideas, being honest on what's going well and what's going not well, what's hard, and being very open on this and receiving back whatever it is. But that's the way I do it. And because it's in philanthropy, I have the feeling that it's much quicker going about these very life essential topics, such as purpose, like what's driving us in life and why do we do what we do and why should we give or not? And these things, it's super, super interesting work that already brought me a lot of things, and also especially strong connections with people. That's what I really love.
Would you say that there are typical obstacles that face founders today in this specific field of impact entrepreneurship or social entrepreneurship, especially when they are from non-traditional background?
Let me just pick in on the last thing you said. First, what I learned in the funding dynamics, I learned that people fund people they know, or that they acquaint to or they relate to. Mm-hmm. So what I found is, for example, I'm more easily funded by women than by men.
Okay.
And that's interesting. And so when you draw this line further, there are not a lot of funders with different backgrounds, not in the impact space, not in the philanthropic space. And so what I just would like to share is that I think how to change this, obviously getting more people with a diverse background as in the space of funders, that would be fantastic. And then maybe in the shorter term, the people that are funders now, it would be great if people would be aware of their biases, which are very often unconscious. Mm-hmm. Why do you decide to give to one startup and not the other? And obviously, it's sometimes very difficult to analyze this because it's gut feeling often. Like people decide very often, not in a rational way. Yeah, there are studies that prove this. Like it's in the first, 3 minutes that people have decided, even when the pitch is not even finished. Mm-hmm. Is this something we're going to go for or not? So it's gut feeling, and analyzing gut feeling is super, super difficult. But just talking about this awareness and about the fact that research shows that, yeah, people will fund, be it investing or philanthropy, profiles that they know. So that's something, a really interesting space to research and to talk about, because it can have so much leverage impact. Because I truly also believe that funding more people with different backgrounds creates another world, another economy, new business models, new thinking.
What would you think would make the path a little bit easier towards a more inclusive business landscape when it comes to, yes, having trainings or at least being aware of their biases, but also in terms of more tangible steps, maybe?
I think to talk about it is already tangible. Mm-hmm. Because I think a lot of people are truly not aware and even sometimes resisting the fact that it would be the case. In their own behavior, which I can understand, but on this funding dynamics is like there's one thing, and that's trust. So it's all about trust. People want to trust the person that you fund or the startup that you fund, and trust is also like it's an emotion, it's intangible, it's a feeling, it's gut, but it's obviously also related to this affinity bias, and so yeah, you can obviously not start talking about trust as your first pitch. So it's more kind of a work that needs to be done in impact investors, offices, VC spaces, business angels that are open, that really have a true intention to be inclusive. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a very personal exercise to be more aware of when you're triggered, when you feel that, oh, no. And why do you say no? Or
do you have any specific examples, maybe from working at Kaira, where you could maybe change someone's mind, or you see like some kind of progress in the social impact ecosystem?
4 years ago, I started Kaira, and then it was like, people were like, what are you talking about, man? I don't get it. you're giving money away.
Yes.
And you don't want to earn money with it. I don't understand it. That was like a blank. So, okay, years and years explaining and then putting the case. We have a portfolio now of 6 projects going from agriculture to pension funds, changing to production houses. And now people are like, Okay, I see what you want to do. That's already a big step. And it might sound like, oh my God, yeah, it's really going slow. I have to say, it's sometimes it's hard to be to be honest, but there is a progress. And we met each other last week at the Impact Shakers Summit.
Yes.
And there it was truly like tangible, and it was so relieving to feel that the space is changing, it's growing. And when I talk about Kyra in this space, people are like, oh, that's great. And it's super. And it's great that it's also existing in Belgium. And whilst it's totally different dynamic than when you have to start the conversation like, whoa, that's like, and but that, what's your business model? And how are you going to do it? And yeah, I know it's tough. It's philanthropy. Yes. And I'm not starting with the family capital. No, I start from the vision, and it's different, but it happens so much. It's so often, it's just a different approach. So the hopeful, examples are unfortunately not very, they're not many, but they're there. And so I live from little hopes, little hope to the other one. So that's what it is today in Belgium. And I have to say that based on my conversations with people from working in Germany, in the Netherlands, in UK, in Italy, it's just Belgium is really like not a philanthropy country. And it's very risk averse in general, even in the impact space. So yeah, this is just a very atypical ambition and endeavor.
Do you have any like piece of advice that you would like to give to maybe more diverse founders or women that want to start in this space, specifically in a context like Belgium?
Stay close to your vision, and your first idea. Yeah, it's true. It's difficult to find a balance. On the one hand, you stay very close to your vision, and on the other hand, you need to be. Yeah, you need to pivot quickly. Yeah, you adapt, you're flexible. But this balance is super difficult because people will often tell you, it's too ambitious, it's not gonna work. And don't be demotivated too quickly, because it's you will unfortunately more often get the reaction that it's too difficult than people will be cheering at you, yeah, it's great. And so, and that's why I would also recommend that you gather more with people that you feel have a true intention to support you in a positive way. But it always comes down to the same thing, like try to stay centered, try to stay close to yourself, and then you will be able to make the difference better between the intention of the feedbacks you get. And also like do the things that give you energy. That's super important because in my personal journey at a certain moment it was so tough that I was like fatigued and demotivated, and like I was just fighting all the time, and it was a struggle, and I lost energy like daily, and it was not good. And then I was like, okay, center, what's going on? Okay, I'm not feeling well. It's tough. This is not the way I want to work. This is not what I want to do. This is not going to be helping me in my putting this idea in the world. No. So I switched it, and I went to things that gave me energy. I consulted people that always give me good energy. And this is already, I think, great help. To focus on this positive feedbacks or energies you get. And also very important is see and embrace the things you did that you realized. Because always when you're somebody who is wanting to achieve a lot and you're quite tough on yourself, and you're mostly seeing what you didn't achieve yet. But actually, it's so valuable and very important to celebrate the small successes, or celebrate, if you don't want to celebrate, just embrace it and be kind with yourself and say, like, I already did this, that's great. And yeah, just be grateful for that, for yourself and for your surroundings that support you in this. Because it's in this quick era of, yeah, big successes, and often it's forgotten, and then you have the risk to, yeah, not celebrate them and lose yourself in this, in the struggle of the, yeah, the pioneering way is just, it's struggle often. But yeah, so if I could just close this thing with one thing, it's just be just gentle and kind with yourself.
Okay, that's a really nice way to wrap it up, in fact. This is the end of our podcast, of our episode today. Thank you so much, Hetiel, for your time. I'm wishing you the best with Kaira. I really hope things will get easier soon, and that the social impact sector will just become a little bit more diverse and inclusive. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Safa. With a lot of pleasure.